All right, I'm here with Professor Mass, 6 degree, 7 degree,
six degree.
Richard Bressler is widely recognized as the first student of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu in the USA, and I say non-Brazilian, right, in the world. Jorge Gracie was one of the first at the history books, going outside of Brazil, right, and teaching. Yeah. For almost 20 years, he worked closely alongside Jorge Gracie, helping to grow Jiu-Jitsu through the Gracie garages, the Gracie Academy, and the early days of the Ultimate Fighting Championship. He was one of the first Americans to earn a teaching certificate through the original instructor certification program at the Gracie Academy, and one of the first Americans to earn a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He still teaches Jiu-Jitsu and practices alternative healing in Los Angeles, California. Wow. And I didn't get to finish your book, Worth Defending, but 1979. So I was
This book right here you're talking about.
Yeah, Worth Defending. Okay. I was 3 years old when you did your first jiu-jitsu class. 1979, Jorge Gracie came to the U.S. Could you tell the story a little bit with where he goes and he's looking to buy a waterbed, or you had an extra waterbed that you got, and then you're like, okay, I can sell this and make some money on it, right?
Well, I just didn't need it. So.
You didn't need it, right?
And by the way, I've heard some accolades about you that you're you've been a champion and all that stuff, and I want you to know, back when I started, I would have kicked your ass. Now, okay, I would run.
Man, one of the things that I really, sucked me in, I can't wait to finish it, is just your vulnerability in the book. I was like, wow, this is what it's all about. You know, jiu-jitsu really helping people. And, I've been doing, not since I was 3 years old, but, since 1994. So it's been a big, most of my life now, right? And, that's the big, it's just remarkable what it does to people. That's what's done for me, right?
Oh, there's no question. Jiu-jitsu, it really did save my life and it changed my life.
Do you mind talking into the microphone?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
No worries.
It saved my life. The way that I was going when I met Horian, I had an extra waterbed because I had a buddy that was in the business. So what happened was that I bought a waterbed mattress from this buddy, and he worked at a place called The Sleep Shop.
The Sleep Shop, uh-huh.
And so I had it, and then he said, Richard, we sell like a set, the frame and stuff. And I said, I should probably get a frame then. He goes, yeah, get the whole set. And it came with a mattress. Mm. And I said, can you just deduct it? And he said, no. He says, you got to get the whole set. It's, and I said, oh, great. Now I'm going to have this extra thing. And so that extra mattress right there, my life changed because of that. And I put an ad in the recycler.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And
one simple thing like that changed the trajectory of everything for you.
Yeah, it did. So,
and for the world, right? And martial arts, really, because you're the
I a lot of people have called me, well, I've been called a lot of things, but I'd like to think myself as an ambassador for jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. And because I had this extra mattress, I put it in the recycler, and for $25. And when I got home, there was a message from somebody. I called the number back, and Horian answered, and he said, that was from my roommate. He wanted one, but he already bought one. So I was about ready to hang up, and he said, but I'm looking for one. So I said, okay, I live in Marina Del Rey. He says, okay, be there in 20 minutes. So that's when you could get to from Hermosa Beach or Redondo Beach to Marina Del Rey, because mm-hmm. the traffic wasn't like it is. So he shows up, really calm, athletic, good-looking guy, tan. And we go upstairs, I show him the mattress, and he says, okay, and then I have three extra sets of sheets in the packaging, king-size sheets. And he goes, how much do you want for the sheets? And I said, $15, a set. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I'll give you $15 for all three sets. And I said, come on, man. He says, I'm Brazilian. I don't have a lot of money, whatever. You know, that was a standard thing. And I said, they cost more than that. And he says, you never know when it'll come back to you. So I said, okay.
Karma, right? He was like, yeah. Some good karma.
Yeah, so I sold it. $40 for three sets of sheet and the mattress. And then as he's walking out of the place, out of my apartment, he goes, have you ever done any martial arts? And I said, well, you know, I boxed a little bit. You know, I didn't want to sound like I didn't know anything.
Right.
And I literally boxed for maybe less than 6 months, just enough to get myself in trouble, but to learn the basic movements.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, why? And he says, well, my family's been doing jiu-jitsu in Brazil for 65 years, 60 years, whatever it was. And he said, we're a group of champions. And I went like, yeah. And you have to ask for a discount because, you know, I expected a champion would, you know.
Sure.
And he says, why don't you come by for a free class? And I said, well, free? Okay. What the heck? What do I have to lose? And I expected to walk in there, you know, put on a, you know, gi and scream and do some katas. And we just went through the stand-up self-defense. And he was very gentle, very calm, very like, you don't have to show me respect. I'm going to show you respect. Mm-hmm. And in turn, how can you not show somebody respect who respects you? And I was so insecure. You know, I was doing drugs. And I went like, and then he said, okay, lay down. And I lay down, he mounts on top of me, he says, what would you do? Well, you know, he says, well, just do what you're going to do. So obviously I couldn't escape. And then he said, okay, now mount on me. And he was gone in like, you know, 5 seconds, if that much. And I went, wow. He says, let me show you what I did. So we did this, and I was like, wow, it's amazing. And after the class, I went, okay, I want to do this. I want to learn this. And we were done. He made some fresh watermelon juice for me and gave me some fresh, you know, some dates. And then I came back and I just started taking private classes for $10 a class.
Where did you guys train?
This is before we moved into the house in Hermosa Beach. Mm. It was in North Redondo. It was about maybe, less than a half a mile from that.
Was it in a garage?
It was in a garage in a house, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This was before Hermosa Beach, which was our garage. That was known as the garage. You know,
the first Gracie garage.
That's right, the first Gracie garage. That was my house in Hermosa.
Mm.
It was a really great house and, you know, on 3rd Street in Hermosa Beach. So,
wow.
Yeah, and then the first week we're there, Elio, Hickson and Carlos Gracie Jr. spent a week with us.
Wow. Yeah, I'm the first American, Carlos Gracie Jr. or Gracie Baja black belt, right?
Wow.
So I'm going to ask you some more questions about that, those days, you know, what you remember. I started getting into it when the book that was ending, and my wife was getting mad at me because I was trying to listen to it in bed, you know? She didn't want to hear it. It's like, I have enough jiu-jitsu in my life as it is. Yeah.
Shh, I'm getting to the good part.
So they stayed at your house.
Yeah,
when they came to visit. So Hickson, those are the first guys, that first brothers and cousins that came.
Elio, Hickson, and Carlos Gracie Jr. spent the week with us. Elio got obviously Horian's bedroom, and the three, Horian, Hickson, and Carlos Gracie, had sleeping bags. I don't remember. I mean, I was getting high all the time. So
yeah,
but they basically slept in the living room. And here,
wow,
I shared the house with, like, you know, some of the best in the world. And then I got classes. I got a class with Elio, and I got to roll with Hickson, and then a little bit with Carlos Gracie Jr. But it was Hickson's class that was a lot of fun, just like, you know, Elio, because, you know, here I remember Horan comes with me, he says, Richard, my dad wants to give you a class. And I said, great. And I went down, and he was already in a gi on the mat. And I went up to Horan and I said, you know, and he was younger than me now, but he was, you know, had gray hair, very, well, thin like I am, but he was like 5'7". Mm-hmm. And I went up to Jorge and I go, I don't want to hurt your dad. And he pats me on the shoulder. He goes, I think he'll be okay. So his dad started on his back with his hands in his belt and just told him, you know, Jorge stayed there. He says, attack him. So, you know, I tried to do stuff and all he did is move around. And next thing I know, he elbow escaped, swept me, and...
With his hands tied?
With his hands tied. I was, you know, and then he finished me. And I'm like, I don't remember how he did it. I just remember that I had to stop.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. And I was worried about hurting him.
What was your first impression of, his dad and brother and cousin coming in to, you know, to stay with you guys?
I was really in awe. I mean, for me, and I was kind of like one of the first who coined this jiu-jitsu heaven.
Jiu-jitsu heaven.
I mean, here I get to share the mat, get to share the place with these guys for a week.
Thinking about it now, right? Looking in the past, but at the time.
Oh yeah. It was, you know, it was just something that, you know, it was the start of a revolution that I didn't know back then.
Right. Did they speak English at the time?
Jorian spoke English.
Right.
Carlos Gracie Jr., very, very broken English. Elio never learned English. And Hickson, not really. Because I remember when I went to Brazil a year later, I went over to Hickson's house. Mm. And his wife back then, Kim, mm-hmm. she was pregnant with Hoxson.
Okay.
And she spoke English. And she sent me and Hickson to the store. And me and Hickson are walking down the street. And here I feel like I'm with a bodyguard. Because Hickson Gracie at 19, who's going to mess with us?
Yeah.
And him and I would look at each other and we'd just kind of like thumbs up because we didn't understand what he said. So that's how it was. But, you know, so, but Horian was there to translate. And it was pretty amazing.
So you got to go to Brazil, like after, like you said, a year after?
Yeah, a year after, you know, because Horian went to Brazil and he,
he'd go back and forth because in the history books, like, or in history books, but the kind of the videos and all the documentaries I've seen, it's like there's just a blurb of Jorge Gracie, right, coming to California and then kind of going back and forth. Is that how it was?
He was going back and forth. And when he would go back, he first time he went back, I think he borrowed $2,000 or $4,000 because he said, I want to buy some, you know, back then it was Jordache jeans, Champion juicers. And he said, the Brazilians will pay top dollar for this stuff. So he said, I'll pay you when I get back. So, you know, I'd say, sure. So I loaned him the money. He got back from Brazil, I don't know, 3 weeks, a month, whenever it was. And he goes, sorry, I can't pay you back right now. Mm. I'm like, what do you mean you can't pay me back? He said, things didn't work out like I planned, but not to worry. He said, from now on, you're going to get free classes. So I started getting free jiu-jitsu classes, free private classes with Horian.
Okay.
And I got them for about 4 years. And you know, he paid me back like a couple years later, but I still continued to get free classes. So it was definitely well worth it. And the only reason why he stopped and started charging me again is because of me. We went on a river rafting trip and then went to Tahoe and he had a blowout in his car. And he said, you know, it's $80 for a new tire, whatever it was. And he says, so it's $40, Richard. And I went, it's your car. And, you know, is that my cheapness? So when he got back, he goes, you know what? From now on, you're going to start paying for your car. I says, you know, this was about the tire. I'll give you the money. And he goes, no, it's about the tire. But he said, I think, you know, so I... Karma, you know, karma.
Interesting. Hey, karma.
Yeah. But even still, not only was I getting private classes with him, but I was also helping out when he would do private classes. So I got to share a lot. I got to learn how to teach. And
when you went down to Brazil, where did you train?
I stayed with. Do you know who Jacare is?
Yeah,
Romero
Jacare. Yeah, of course, the guy who started Allianz and.
Yeah.
All those lineages.
Yeah, I stayed with him, and he was good friends with Halls.
Halls.
And so I stayed with him, and we went out. I forgot the name of the beach we went to, but I stayed with him for a week. And then I trained at the Gracie Academy in Rio. And I knew Elliot was there, and that's when I first met Hoyler. And Hoyler was like maybe not even 14 yet.
Wow.
And they said, okay, get in this little kid's guard and pass his guard. And I went to pass his guard thinking I'm hot stuff back in 1981. And just when I really had a good tight guard pass, and next thing I know, I'm back in his guard, and I'm like, "Do it again," you know. Did it again, and he just, and I went, "Wow!" And they said, "Oh, that's Hoyler Gracie," and I'm like, oh, "Okay." So I trained, you know, there like every other day when I was there, and it was just.
He was at the Gracie Academy.
Yeah.
Holes. It was with. Were they all at the Gracie Academy at that time?
Because of then, because of how much I was still getting high, it was very vague as far as I remember being able to meet Halls and watch him go with this judo champion who came in and he held his own on his feet. Mm-hmm. And then when he got to the ground, I mean, Halls just destroyed him.
Yeah,
He was at his prime back
then.
Yeah. And we got to share the mat a little bit, but... It's like, it's so vague.
Because did you meet Carlson Gracie?
No, I never met Carlson.
Okay, because they had the gym together, right, for a while.
I don't know what year that was.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
But you must be friends with John Juano then.
Yeah, I know John Juano, yeah, of course.
Yeah, John's a good friend.
Yeah, great, yeah. Yeah, he's been around for a long time as well.
Yeah.
Created the UFC glove, right? The one that stuck.
That's right.
Yeah. So okay, so you went to Brazil, and then you met more Hoyler Gracie. You trained at the Gracie Academy, and was that the only place you trained at?
Yeah, it's the only place I really remember training. And then I went over to Carlos Gracie Sr.'s house because I wanted to meet him.
Yeah,
and he was just, you know, very, very kind of subdued. I met him and Carly
Gracie.
Yeah, she helped she was the translator for us because I wanted to find out about the whole thing with new nutrition.
Right.
And didn't get that much information from him. Matter of fact, there's a picture of me meeting him in the book too.
Okay.
So
Helly was like the history, right? From, you know, I wasn't alive. I met Helio towards the end, right? But Carlos Gracie, a senior, had already passed. But you know, like he focused more on health and nutrition, right?
Right.
And Helly was the fighter, and he you know, competed and fought, you know, until some of his sons and like Carlson and
right.
Or nephew, right? Rather, took over, right? The family name, you know, represented right. Representing the family name.
Yeah, Carlson was the badass.
So how was it? You started to talk about him being focused on nutrition and showing you like the ways he was eating and what was that? What was that like?
It was very vague. Like I said, there's certain things that stick out and there's other things that don't. And I just remember that our meeting was short and it was kind of uneventful because it's not like he was outgoing or.
And you didn't speak English too, right?
Yeah. I mean, Carly was there to help translate, but it seemed like he wasn't that interested, like as much as Elia was because hell, I was helping his son.
Yeah.
His first, you know,
first son, yeah.
Yeah, to do all these things to help him with, you know, everything that I was doing.
He was invested in you.
Yeah. So I always kind of thought like, wow, as a matter of fact, I say in the book, I've said in speeches, I said, I knew who Elio Gracie's favorite student was, you know, and I said, it's me, you know. And I said, that's the way that he made people feel though. He really, if he liked you, you felt like, man, this guy, but meeting Carlos was, you know, it as much as I was starting to get interested in nutrition, it was kind of an uneventful meeting.
Right. Yeah, because of the language. I remember myself going to Brazil for the first time. Like, it's so overwhelming. So many things going on, right? Yeah. It's like a whole other planet.
How long were you there?
You know, off and on for about 5 years.
Wow.
But the first time I went down, it was just like, I went to Baja and Rio, right? And that was just crazy. Like, just, you know, the buses, the beach, the, you know, the speedos, the just everything, right? It was like, what's going on over here, you know?
Driving, people going
the girls and thoughts, it's like, whoa, what's going on over here? You know, the surfing, the jiu-jitsu, you know, like all these, I mean, it was already more evolved, right? It was after the UFC.
Oh, so right. It
was a lot more people doing it, you know? Yeah. It was part of the culture, right, of the young people. But, yeah, it was just so overwhelming. Like, you know, it's like I can remember bits and pieces, you know, and it was... is more recent, right? But
right.
But
I just remember going to Brazil at the airport and then having to go through customs. I never had been out of the country up until then. And when I got there, I saw Elio came to the airport with Helson.
Ah.
And so we got there. And then I saw, as we drove back from the airport, I'm like holding on because Elio is driving. And, you know, we have lanes.
In America.
Well, they had lanes too, but it was just...
Nobody follows them.
Well, no, they're right on the lane. I mean, he's like going, which one so he can left or right? And I'm like going, whoa, this is kind of wild. Because when Horian got here, stop signs meant nothing.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I was like, wow, dude. I'm like, yeah. So
it's a different world.
Yeah, it was a totally different world.
Yeah. I was trying to remember about the Helly Gracie, the holes Gracie picked up the this is I guess this is later, he picked up a bot, what's his name, oh my God, he taught wrestling, he was friends with him,
Bob Anderson,
yeah. Were you friends with Bob Anderson? Did you know him?
I never met Bob Anderson, and I think he met Bob Anderson. I think he went to New York before Horian.
Okay.
Went to California, or Horian went to California. Early, I think, in the late 60s, but he was here for a short time. And then, you know, he had some stuff that happened in the 60s, and then he came back. And I think he came in 78, you know, and he taught a couple, you know, went to the YMCA,
right,
and taught
right,
a couple
right.
people, and he taught it. But no, there was no regular student. So I was his first regular student, you know, one that said, like, I want to do this again.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, it was just right place, right time. And I needed it.
There was a moment in your book where you're like, you know, you were like everybody loses or has a bad day, you know, on the mat, right? And they're like down on themselves, like, oh man, I suck at this, you know, or whatever. They're down on themselves. And then you said something to him saying, you know, putting yourself down probably. And then he's like, Richard, there's no bad student. There's only bad teachers.
Yeah.
You just worry about coming in and I'll take care of the rest.
Yeah, well, what happened was he was showing a move, and there was a guy from Brazil, a bigger guy.
Mm.
Most guys were bigger, you know. I'm like, back then, I'm 140 now, it's like maybe 150. And, you know, he shows me the move, and I couldn't execute it. So I was really down on myself, and I walked out to my car, and I'm sitting in my car, and I'm just sobbing. Going, why am I going to do this? You know, I suck. You know, it's like a little pity party.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he came out and saw me. He goes, what's the problem? And I said, why are you wasting your time, dude? I said, obviously can't do this. I'm not going to be any good. You know, I don't know where the negative, it was coming from the negative kind of crap was right. going on. And he said, Richard, there's no such thing as a bad student. There's only bad teachers. But he said, I'm the best. So he said, just show up. Just keep coming to class. And you're going to learn when you're supposed to learn.
Yeah.
And I thought he was lying to me because he needed the money. But, you know, but I can't tell you how many times that I've said that, too.
Yeah.
Because it's like we get into our head.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you share in your book, right? You share about how your dad had the fast food, Chuck's?
Chuck Burger.
Chuck Burger. And, you know, he worked his butt off. You know, your family had a chain that he ran for many years, right, in the Chicago area. Before that, there was ice cream.
Yeah, well, it came. Bressler's Ice Cream.
Bressler's Ice Cream
was the largest independent in Chicago, and we were the top competitor of Baskin Robbins because Bressler's was 33 flavors, Baskin-Robbins was 31. Henry's Drive-In's competition was McDonald's. My dad opened up like 130 stores in the Midwest.
Wow.
And he couldn't get along. He was the baby brother of six.
Wow.
And he left Chicago to come out west to do his own thing. My dad's name was Chuck. And so he actually, you know, started, you know, Chuck Burger was just perfect to do something like that. So here, you know, so that I'm born into the fast food business. I mean, I started at like 9-10 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. You shared about how he, you know, you started to, you know, work at the, at Chuck Burgers and he started doing, you know, some basic things. Right. And then, you know, you loved it at the time, but then, you know, your dad was very like hands-on or very, like micromanaging, right? Like that was the style of management.
Oh yeah. No one could do anything better than him.
Right. Right. And so like it, you know, your confidence, mess with your confidence, like you're never good enough. Like that's what you put in your head, at least.
You know, when a person is constantly criticizing you, the message to me goes, God, I must really suck if he has to constantly correct me. And I didn't know at the time he was just trying to make me a better version.
Right.
But the way that he did it, you know, I started listening to self-improvement. I said, why don't you find me doing something right instead of something wrong? And I developed a sarcastic edge because my dad would walk in the store and the water could maybe run in or the door would be opening. And he'd say, why is the water running? Why is the door open? Why is the light on? And it's like, there's no good answer for that.
Right, right, right.
You know, so I developed an edge and started getting really sarcastic with my dad. And which is not, you know, it can be kind of funny, but and I've toned it down. But, you know, that it was all a learning process because teaching, you know, you have to be different. You're helping people. And I didn't want to, do what my dad did.
Right.
And Horan would always say, you know, he says, Richard, always find out, help them do something, like catch them doing something right when they do it. Like when you'd put your hand in a certain place, if they would do it wrong, you'd say no thumb, and you'd take the thumb and you go, oh, and then you'd say very good, you know, and because when he did it to me, I went like, wow, he's telling me very good, he did it.
Be a good finder, right? Get people thinking the positive.
Yeah.
And if you correct somebody, like that, they say like PCP, right? Praise, correct, praise.
Yeah.
That's if you have time, right? But
yeah, so and as far as vulnerability, to me, if you're not being vulnerable, if you're not being yourself, what good is it? I mean, if I met you, if we just came in here and you asked me questions, I would say the same thing. But being vulnerable publicly for some reason is so much different. But I don't think I'm helping anybody if I don't share the struggles that I went through. So, you know, it's just, and it helps me what jiu-jitsu did for me. A lot of people have reached out because of that, I was never that tough guy and really had little aspirations to be.
When you first started jiu-jitsu, you're like, I like this. And then of course, Horan Gracie being, you know, the master teacher he is. And of course, meeting all the Helly Gracie, all the grandmaster Helly Gracie and all the family, you loved it. You loved it, but what did you set? Did you have like a goal? Anything? Did you any direction that you want? Any goals that you wanted to do with jiu-jitsu once you started to really get into it?
All I wanted to be able to do was learn how to defend myself.
Okay.
That was really my goal. You know, I didn't have aspirations to compete, even though we had small in-house places and in-house things.
Yeah, the Gracie Challenge matches.
We had challenge. We went out to Benny Akita's place. Mm-hmm. We went to a place that taught Did you get to the part in the book where we went to an American jiu-jitsu school?
No.
So he says, hey, we're going to this American jiu-jitsu. And I'm like,
American jiu-jitsu.
And I says, well, they do jiu-jitsu in America? And I was like so excited. And we went in there and they had these guys doing stand-up choreography. They'd throw a punch and then the guys would catch the punch and turn around and then they'd look like kind of like Aikido. And I'm like, I says, this doesn't look like jiu-jitsu. And Horian just, you know, so we met the teacher and he says, look. And we went over, I was a fresh blue belt and all the rest of the guys were either blue belts or white belts. And Horian says, look, what you do works really good, but maybe I can show you a couple things over here. And the guy was a black belt. And so he says to Horian, he said, look, why don't you and your black belt come with me and the other guys go over there, kind of like dismiss us. Mm. So I start to go over with the guys. Horian grabs me by the sleeve and he pulls me over. He says, Richard, he says, come with me. And I'm like, Horian, he said, black belts. And he whispers in my ear, he says, trust me, you know more than these guys. And I'm like, oh, holy crap. And so I went with him and I have my blue belt on. And Horian says, look, what you do works really, really nice. But what would you do if? So he says, my friend, why don't you lay down? He says, this is Richard Mount. So he says, what would you do if you found yourself on the ground like this? Mm. So I'm mounted on the guy. The guy reaches up. He puts his two fingers here and he pushes down. You know, I feel pressure. So immediately I just sat up higher. And the guy grabbed my gi. And the guy was probably, he was much bigger than me. And he took me and he just threw me. As I was falling, I snatched his arm. And as I was catching his arm, Horian like let out this loud clap like. And I looked at him and he just said, like, wave me off. And I was like, I had the guy in an arm lock. Mm. So he just said, you know, just like, trust me. So I said, okay. And he says, look, he said, because of your size, you could throw somebody off with power. But I said, I'm looking for something technical. So he says, so why don't you lay down and you mount on Richard. So the guy, and he says, hold him down. Don't let him escape. So he holds me down. As he's holding me down, I grab his wrist. I trap his foot. I roll him out. And then the guy goes crazy again. I'm in his guard. And Horian says, stop. He says, the fight would change right now. I just wanted to show you the technical stuff. And so he told me, he says, Richard, the reason I called you off is because I didn't want to show these guys anything. He says, they weren't asking us to teach them. I wanted to see what they had. And the guy was a black belt. I mean, you know, if I was a blue belt and like, if I'm mounted on top of you, I'm not going to stay there very long. And vice versa. If I got mounted on by a black belt, that's probably where I'm going to die.
Yeah.
So, you know, I saw things like that. I saw the little things when we went to other schools. Back then it was more of a challenge. He wanted to see like what was good out there. And he started making enemies because, you know, a lot of them would turn into fights.
Yeah.
And he said, Richard, I don't want to make enemies. He said, you can make enemies. So he basically gave, he was the, I was the unofficial shit starter for Horian.
He wanted to show the effectiveness of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, right? Just like the culminating to the UFC.
Yeah.
That was the goal always, right? To spread his family's art.
Yeah. So, you know, and I never really felt bad. I was talking to Hidan and Henner and I said, I was always kind of trying to instigate something. Mm. Because I wanted to find out who the real tough guys were, because it didn't matter how tough they were, no matter what happened. Horian, every time I ever saw him do a challenge match, he never hit anybody. He would give them maybe a little slap or just to make them get distracted, but he never hurt anybody. He choked them. If they had a gi on, collar choke. If they didn't have a gi on, he turned them over and he rear naked choke.
Naked choke.
And it was
gentle art, right?
Yeah,
he really showed the gentle art.
Yeah, so
you could beat somebody without having to hurt them.
Yeah, and this is what my experience in jiu-jitsu was, because they were trying to make a name for themselves, and that's where the culmination of the UFC
Yeah. So what was it like? So you guys moved in together, and then what was the process going to opening up the first Gracie Academy, first Gracie Gym in America?
Well, Horion, after he had four garages, he had Hickson in one, Hoyce in another. He had...
So he set his brothers up in different garages?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the Machados were in a garage. They lived, I think, Hegan, Carlos Machado, and John Machado. Those John are the Machado. Three that I would go over, because I would go to different houses and take a class. And after, you know, doing articles for martial arts magazines, and he finally came to me when he had three or four garages that were constantly going. He says, for us to get any, and plus doing seminars. He says, Richard, if I'm going to take this thing any further, we have to have a school. And I said, I agree. I said, what's the problem? And he goes, and I says, well, yeah, I mean, you have some, get some money. He says, Richard, come on. I'm like, what do you mean?
I'm Brazilian.
I don't speak English very well. That was his thing. So basically, you know, I had about 40 grand. I said, how much do you need? He said, I need 60. So I said, I went to my parents and I said, can I borrow 20 grand? What for? I want to help Horian open a jiu-jitsu school. What? You know, and so I borrowed 20 grand from them plus my 40, because the bank would only give him a $60,000 loan if he had $60,000. So my money got us the loan. We went to the bank in Torrance and they gave us the loan, and the Gracie Academy on Carson Street was born.
Wow.
And it was amazing how all of a sudden it went from, you know, but as busy as we were back then, running a business was so much different, because here we're in, you know, where it was private classes and then maybe you'd have a small group on the weekend. Here, now we had to do like private classes plus you'd have group classes. Yeah, so, and we were, there was about 3 or 4 times where the sheriffs came out ready to close the door because we couldn't pay the rent. Because he had Hoyler, Hoyce, Hickson, and himself. How are you supposed to pay the living expenses of those guys in jiu-jitsu classes?
Especially before anybody knew what jiu-jitsu was, right?
Yeah, I mean, we had a waiting list, but still, we weren't, like, packed. And we didn't get really busy until after WOW Promotions, which was the parent company of the UFC. They were right down the street, and they had, you know, they took investors, and I invested 10 grand, my mom and dad invested 10 grand, and it was after the first UFC where, after Hoyce won, we start getting all these people wanting to take classes, and the room upstairs of the Gracie Academy was vacant. And there was a huge room up there. So Horian said, okay, I'm going to rent that out too. And then we went from barely making it to classes were packed. And by then, I mean, packed was 30 people in a class when we were having 6 to 8 normally. So, you know, I had just, you know, got my teaching certificate. And so here I went to, and making a decent living teaching classes and doing privates at the Gracie Academy. So it turned out pretty nice.
Interesting, right? People always see, like, oh, they, you know, they made it big, the UFC, this, that, you know, big contracts, but they don't see the getting evicted, right? Almost getting evicted from the space.
And the whole thing, I mean, I've asked people, I say, look, do you know the history of jiu-jitsu, how it started? And they go, yeah, I think after the UFC. And I said, no. I said, the UFC was 93. There was 14 years before that.
14 years.
People don't know the history because they're not really interested. They're just seeing you know, jiu-jitsu is popular. Let's go into a school. Mm-hmm. But they don't know why they're doing it. They don't know how it's brand. I mean, it's relatively new. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just like to have people kind of know a little bit about the roots here in America. Stuff in Brazil, yeah, there was different sides of it in Brazil. And, you know, the Gracies tell their story. But, like, I know who you know who Robert Drysdale is.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. And
I've phenomenal had, book. Yeah, yeah. Books now.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've talked a little bit to Robert, and we've talked, you know, and so it's... There's, and I said, look, I don't know. All I know is what I was told as far as Brazil. But in the U.S., I lived what was happening here. So I got pretty much to be an authority because I saw it right before my eyes. You don't have to believe the stuff that I'm saying, but, you know, I take pride in being as honest as I can. I mean, I saw the things with Gene LaBelle. Mm-hmm. We went to the judo schools. Mm. And a lot of people, because Gene died, they don't like some of the things that I had to say about him.
Yeah, interesting. I'm interested in that. Was Gokhar there, too, at the time?
You know, I don't remember Gokhar, but I remember... You remember the movie, of course, Enter the Dragon.
Right.
Well, there were three stars. John Kelly, Saxon... I forgot. John Saxon, Jim Kelly, Bruce Lee. Mm-hmm. Well, John Saxon was a student. He was a brown belt in judo. He became a student of Horian. And Jim Kelly became a student of Horian's. Mm. So the two of the three co-stars for Enter the Dragon became students. And so since John Kelly was doing judo, he invited us down to some judo, I think LACC had a judo club. So we first went down there, and I was just watching Horian on the mat with these guys. And it was amazing. Because Horian was looking around the room because he wanted to find the toughest guy there.
Was that Gene LaBelle's place?
I don't know if this was Gene LaBelle's or if that came after, because he wasn't there the first time. But I remember Horian started rolling with people, and he would look at me, and he would mouth out, like, choke. Like, I'm gonna choke him. I'm like, okay, sure you are. And all of a sudden, he chokes him. And then he would say, arm lock. And he'd catch the guy in an arm lock. And then as he's doing this, he was looking around the room for the next guy as he's sparring with somebody. Mm-hmm. I went, how can this guy be so nonchalant as he's rolling, having fun with him, going, oh, that's the guy I want next. So I saw that, and I was going, that's pretty interesting. And then a couple years later, that's when we were invited, and we went to Gene LaBelle wasn't there the first time. He was there the second time. But... skipping ahead to the second time, I was still a blue belt. I was a blue belt for 6 years. Mm-hmm. And the guys were, you know, Hoyler, Hoyce, Hickson were rolling with some of the other guys. And the only one that really was not a black belt there was a masculine-looking female. So we rolled a few times, and she was definitely my size. And every time she got in my guard, I took her back within, I don't know, half a minute. First time I did it, she resisted, you know, and I just put the choke and she tapped. Mm. The second two times right after that, I got her back in, and she, as soon as I got there, like, you know, tapped. So, you know, I said, okay, well, this wasn't much of a challenge. Then one of the black belts, again, a bigger guy that, I don't know, for some reason, I was just attracting these guys. And so he says, hey, let's roll. So the guy... you know, strong.
They think you're easy prey, right? The smaller.
Well, the thing is, he pulled me down, mounted on top, and, you know, because they did have a sense of what to do, but he couldn't finish me. Mm. And he was going for a neck crank, and he was on top. And I'm, like, as he's, like, really close, I'm in his ear, and I says, I might not be able to escape, but you're never going to tap me out. And it pissed him off, and he just, like, squeezed and squeezed. And finally, after, like, 30 seconds, Horian said, look, so he can't escape, but you couldn't finish him. So I felt a little dejected, but when I look back, I go, well, the guy couldn't finish me. So I went and sat, kind of, like, thinking about it, and Gene LaBelle walks up to me. He says, hey, kid, you want to roll? And Gene LaBelle, I mean, the guy was easily 220. And I went, no, but... and I pointed to Health Center. I said, one of those guys would love to roll with you. And he walked in a different direction. And I was like, wow, you'll take me to the mat. And he was kind of notorious for wanting to hurt somebody if you kind of, so I just, you know, I if the black belt did this with Gene LaBelle, you know, so I just said, you know, no thank you. But when I saw him walk away, and that's what I put, you know, there was a thing on YouTube, and I said, no disrespect to the guy. This is what I observed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and he even, when Horian told me, he says, you know, he never did. He talked to Horian on a movie set. He says, yeah, come down, you'll roll with us. He never did roll with him. So, and then the day we went down there and the day that the Gracies kind of dominated them, he said, oh, you came down on a Monday night. He said, that was when all the guys were there, whatever. He says, the Tuesday night were the tough crowd. You know, so... And then, you know, and Gokor said some claims that after the UFC started, he, you know, told that he wanted to be in it. And he said that they didn't want him to be in it because it was too close to jiu-jitsu and they didn't want to take a chance. And I asked Horian, he says, Richard, that never happened. You know, so they had their ego involved. They would have said, yeah, bring it on. You know, so that's the only part that I know about. And if it happened, you know, it happened. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, just, you know, I'm very, my wife's Armenian, and so I'm connected a lot to the Armenian community, you know? So Gokar is, you know, he's done a lot of work for a lot of, you know, been teaching for a lot of years, right, in the LA area.
And the guy's a tough guy.
And Gene LaBelle, yeah, for sure. Sure, for sure. And they've been around, and they're tough guys, you know, they prove themselves in the UFC, like, a bunch of guys, right? And
yeah.
But the history is very interesting because I have a lot of friends that were in around those days too, and they saw, like, Gokar to go training with the Gracies, and they saw what happened, you know, on the mat, you know, on the ground, you know. So it was, you know, a different level, and you can't. I mean, that's the reason why Gracie Jiu-Jitsu exploded around the world, because it was, you know, it was superior than anything out there. And I mean, little Hoist Gracie having 3 fights in 1 night multiple times and winning like he did. I mean, come on. What is that? You know, what's going on? It's different, right? It's different than anything out there. It's different than judo. It's you know, different level, different thing.
Yeah.
In a way, almost. Even though the roots are the same.
Right.
But Helio and, you know, the family, right? Adjusting it and evolving it and, you know, making it what it was.
Yeah, because especially from Elio's side of the family that wanted to make it a self-defense.
Mm.
But also having somebody like Halls and Carlson who would, back in those days, you wanted to fight. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, and so that showing the effectiveness of it and judo, you know, and because I've heard people say, like, oh, it came from judo. And I says, well, the judo that I saw in this country was nowhere near the jiu-jitsu was.
Right.
So if you say so, I don't want to argue with anybody.
It's interesting, right? Like John Danaher, you know John Danaher, right?
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. So he wrote a really good book on the history of jiu-jitsu with Hanzo Gracie's on the cover, and he just talks about how judo evolved, right? And it was, you know, he studied jiu-jitsu and called it judo. But he took away all the stuff the eye gouging and stuff you couldn't practice realistically, so you could run duri, right? And then his students beat all the jiu-jitsu, the samurai, that just trained the quick kill stuff, you know. And that was judo. And over 100 years ago, right, judo was a lot like Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but then it changed because he wanted to make it an Olympic sport, make it spectator friendly. And so it turned into more throwing, less ground, less, you know, the real martial art of it, right? And then one of his students went to Brazil, right? Taught Carlos Gracie Sr. and the rest is history. But they kept the essence of it alive, right?
Right.
Until, you know, until the UFC came out and then showed the effectiveness of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu.
Well, it's kind of what's happening. Anytime something takes on popularity, it's happening to jiu-jitsu now.
Uh-huh.
Because it's becoming a sport.
Right.
And when you... I mean, I've gone into to see some pretty tough guys in Tut seminars, and they can't get out of a headlock.
Right, right, right.
And I'm like, wait a minute. I said, you know, because when I taught at a Krav Maga school for 20 years plus, and I used to take some of the bigger guys in class, and they'd show the stuff, and you know, they'd want to come around just a laying headlock, and they'd
come around.
They'd want to up here to the nose or the eyes. I said, look, what if it's your friend? You're not going to gouge their eyes.
Right.
And I says, besides, I said, now that I know what you're doing, I says, go for my eyes. I says, go for my nose. Go do whatever you're going to do. And they would grab me, and as they do that, I'd catch their arm and I'd hold it. These are guys that have 50, 60 pounds of me who couldn't escape.
Right.
And I said, look, I'm not trying to make you feel bad. I'm just trying to show how vulnerable you are. I'm 50 pounds less than you. Can you imagine if I was 50 pounds more? And I said, yeah, yeah. I said, now grab me. And I says, and grab my hand the way that I'm grabbing your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I would escape. And I just, like I said, so it's the little essence of the technical stuff that is being lost because right. it's such a sportive aspect. It's entertaining, and there's a lot of development that has come. Some of the I can't keep up with all the new moves.
Right, right, right.
And I don't want to do the new moves because my body just,
right.
you know.
I mean, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you about your thoughts on, you know, sports jiu-jitsu and self-defense and fighting. Like, you know, my two cents is like, you know, like come from the old school, like, you know, you
right.
learned jiu-jitsu to learn to know how to fight, right? And to defend yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what it was, right? And then the UFCs came out. I was right at the beginning of that. And I was representing jiu-jitsu too, like that, even when I fought MMA in those earlier days, you know. But, you know, it's gone in different paths, right? Different roads. And there's definitely like a sport jiu-jitsu. There's like kind of MMA, and like even the self-defense thing is kind of being like, it's not important, but it's like the base of everything.
Right.
You can know how to do a barambola, but do you know how to defend yourself in a fight?
Yeah.
Some basic strikes, basic, you know, takedowns, you know, guys that are like world champion jiu-jitsu guys, of course they're going to know how to do like those things, but still, like, you know, you can't, especially teaching beginners, you know, how to escape, you know, that's the stuff they need to learn. Right.
Yeah.
And then that's the foundation. And that's when I was reading your book, I was like, wow, that's the right way. You really learned the right way. Those fundamental things like buck and roll, how to, you know, oompa and, just the basic. And so that really sets you up for success to be a lifetime jiu-jitsu practitioner.
Right, and to be able to teach it. And you know, one of the things that I keep telling people, because I hear other guys in jiu-jitsu without mentioning any names.
Right, right.
But one of the things they say is, you know, get to the top position, or jiu-jitsu is about defending yourself and then being able to, you know, wait till the guy gets tired and then maybe catch him. And I said, you know, wait till you get older and when you don't, I'm not training, I teach a lot, and I know the fundamentals inside and out, but I'm also 71 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I've taken good care of myself, and I might not look 71 as you, compared to it, but I said, my body is still 71. So when I think about getting in a fight, I'm not thinking about catching anybody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about just defending myself. I just want to be able to walk away and, you know, if I catch somebody, great. But I don't want to get caught, and I don't want to get hurt. So I'm thinking jiu-jitsu is a self-defense. And it's being taught as some places as a very aggressive art. I like to call it likened to high school wrestling.
Mm, mm.
High school wrestling has a short life because you can't sustain it unless you're young and you're very strong and you're fit, and you're going to get injured a lot. So guys that can do it in their 20s and 30s, but I have guys now that just go, but I'm not recovering well into my 30s. They go, I'm not recovering. I says, well, maybe you need to change your school and change your attitude about it. And choose your school and choose your training partners wisely. You know, it's my gosh, who was that? Was that your daughter?
Oh, it's Nelson. Nelson's daughter, yeah.
What a cutie.
He brought his whole family here. He's from Brazil. All right. Shout out to Nelson.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a defense, and that's what I'd like to make people aware of. It is a self-defense, especially as we get older.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Yeah. Like, you know, I can't help but think about, like, from when I was in my 20s and competing and fighting, you know, to now my 40s, you know, going closer to 50, you know, my intention is just I want to stay healthy and I want to keep doing it, you know. So my goals are a little bit, of course, I still like to compete and stuff too, but just to, you know, to challenge myself, to keep myself sharp, you know.
Right.
But my intentions, my goals are different, right, in training. Than when I was in my 20s. I was definitely trying to prove and do certain things.
Of course. I mean, that's part of evolution too. Right. You know, we change our attitude, but in the way we do things. And if you're not, I hear so many people, I mean, because of the book, I get contacted and people are like, I hear about all these injuries and the way they're training, and they want to walk away from jiu-jitsu. I have a buddy in his 50s, got his black belt, gosh, I don't know, 9 months ago. And he said, Richard, he says, I don't know if I can do it. And I said, dude, I said, forget about going with the 25-year-olds. I said, even though you're big, you're 6'3", and you weigh 205, I said, your body is still, I said, just do it for the training, do it for the fun. Learn some moves, learn how to relax. And I says, when the guy's gonna compete, find a different partner. If you love jiu-jitsu, you have to change your approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love it and I wanna stay in it. I wanna be on the mat as long as they'll let me. As long as they keep coming for classes, that's how long I'm gonna stay on the mat.
Seems like Helio Gracie stayed on the mat till the end, pretty much, right?
Yeah, I remember rolling with him when he was in his mid-80s.
Wow.
And, you know, and I think it was a pretty much well into a purple belt. And I remember he didn't speak English. So, do you know who Mauricio Zingano?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mauricio was in as a translator for us.
Okay.
And, as I'm rolling with him, you know, he's in my guard. I wrap his arm. I'm going for the choke with armor on, you know. So as he's there right now, and I'm holding his neck, keeping him in close, and I said, stop. He says, what? I said, can you ask him what he's thinking right now? So I'm holding him, and he says something in Portuguese, like, what are you thinking? And then he tells Mauricio, Mauricio says to me, he said, he's thinking that you're thinking you're going to catch him. I went, okay. Yeah, it's...
I remember, you know, Saul Ribeiro, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, he was telling me just old school Helio Gracie stories, and he was just, till the end, he was just fire. You know, like, you can't beat me, you can't tap me, you know? And so that was his winning, and he wasn't passing the guard or whatever, dominating, but he was like, you can't beat me, you can't tap me. His defense, that was his mindset, you know? So always a way to make him win and challenge himself.
Yeah, like hit on Henner would tell me, he says he'd be down on the mat, you know, and this is when he was in his upper 80s, and he kept guys coming. He said, okay, mount, tap me. And you know, they couldn't tap me. He said, obviously, you know, they could do stuff to hurt him, but technically they couldn't do
anything. Right.
So a lot of times what I'll do is when I'm on the mat with guys, you know, some of the guys in class that are like purple belts, I'll go like, attack me. I want to see if you can surprise me.
Mm.
And, you know, whether I can escape or not, I'm teaching all these guys, it's harder. But the one thing that I'm having success with is that it's very hard for them to tap me. So I kind of like, he really put something in my mind.
I was
never, ever like him, but I just remember that kind of mentality.
That's it. You find a way to win, right? You're in your head, like, how can I win?
Yeah.
I can't win by, you know, maybe it was a takedowns, and I'm not going to win takedowns, but... Can you tap me? And so that was his the way to stay in there where he could win.
And I want to shut the guard down. If I'm in someone's guard, I don't want to think about passing. I just want to shut it down and make sure it's hard for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, your mentality changes as we get older. I mean, yeah. It's so, you know, but it's fun.
Yeah, that's it. Oh my God. What are some just vintage moments that you relish with the Gracie families in the 80s, you know, 1980s?
You know, there's so many. It's just being in the house and just spending the time that I did, you know, and being picked up from, like, I keep thinking about getting picked up from the airport, you know, from him, because I went like, wow.
This Rio.
In Rio.
Mm-hmm. By Haley Gracie.
Yeah, he was the grand master, and this guy's picking me up at the airport.
That, yeah.
He made me feel like royalty. And just the way that, you know, being him coming to the academy, him, like when we had the school, I would teach class, and I was a brown belt back then. And some of the guys that, remember, I'm in my mid to late 40s, and there's guys that I'm teaching that are blue belts that are 21, 22 years old that have like 70 pounds on me, and they'd get across the side and they'd kind of smash me. Hard to finish me, but they'd smash.
Mm.
So Ellie would watch a class, and then after the class, he would, and he'd signal me to go upstairs. So I would, you know, go upstairs in Horan's office, and he says, my dad was watching the class, and he wants to show you a couple things to protect yourself. So he would show me a couple things, like, oh, dude, when the guy's in sight control, hold here, and he said, you'll protect yourself much better. So I went like, wow, and then I tried it, and I went like, son of a bitch, it worked. And so what I did back then is I started sharing with the bigger guys, and Elio saw, and he called me up again. He says, when my dad gives you something, it's for you. Don't share it with the guys that are doing this to you. You know, so that kind of mentality, that kind of attitude, and the just to be around back then, when, you know, going into school, into tournaments, the first tournaments I would go into a school, everybody would know me. After a few years, I go to a tournament, maybe somebody would go, hey, Richard, you taught my first class. Now I've went into a tournament, possibly one person might go, oh, aren't you Richard? You know, it's like, it's gotten so big now.
Now, yeah.
It's amazing how big it is. So it's kind of, it's just a lot of fond memories. Nothing particular. I think just sharing the house with, you know, when it was always special when Elio came, because he came, you know, more than once the first time, and then he came later. And even when I moved out, I mean, I got kicked out of the house when Hiran was born because, you know, I mean, we had a two-bedroom house, and it was Suzanne, Horian, and then she was ready to pop. And I think Hickson was born in December of 81, and I left there, I think, in October of 81. And he came to me and says, look, you know, this can't be. And I said, Horian, I said, I got the house. And he says, Richard, come on, we have the garage, you know. But, you know. So I left there, but, you know, and I told Hiran, I said, I'm still pissed at you to the day because you made me lose my cool house in Hermosa Beach. But, you know, I'm glad that I'm really close to the boys, too.
That's great.
It's all been really, for the most part, a good ride, other than when, you know, when I left the Gracie Academy.
Why did you leave the Gracie Academy? Because of the...
Well, because of what happened, you know, when he told me not to come back. And when I came back, and then he couldn't fire me. So I started doing data entry in the computer there. And people were, why aren't you teaching? You shouldn't be on a computer. And so I started telling him, I says, well, what happened? So he fired me for that. He says, Richard, you were kind of creating a little mutiny by kind of making it sound like I was the bad guy, you know. So I left there, and I,
because you were hurt, right? And you're like I can't. It's hard for me to teach.
Yeah. So I mean, like, I 2 weeks to get past the injury, but it was something, you know, that the ego was strong, and I got kicked out of there, and so you know, I left the academy. Actually, you've heard of Beverly Hills Jiu-Jitsu?
Right.
I was Marcus
Vinicius.
I was the original founder.
Oh, okay.
Me, Lowell Anderson, and another guy, I won't even mention his name because he's not worth talking about.
Okay. But
we started that. We looked for the location. Do you know who Chris Brennan is?
Yes, of course.
Chris Brennan and Mark Lehman, they came and they helped us set it up.
Oh, no way.
They did some painting for us. And we were there for a few months before things went south. But we were the original. It was on 369 South Robertson. And when it was sold, I think they moved across the street because there was a karate guy that moved across the street, Avi Roca, who's now a jiu-jitsu. I think he's a black belt now. He moved to a different studio, so then Beverly Hills Jiu-Jitsu took that one over.
Okay.
And Marcus Vinicius went over there. But
that was later on. That was in the 90s, right?
Yeah. Well, we started Beverly Hills Jiu-Jitsu in the fall of 96.
96.
And I left there in just before the summer of 97.
Okay.
Because we had $100 unlimited jiu-jitsu. We wanted to like make $100 unlimited classes, but we had 50. We got 50 right away. But how can you make a living?
Yeah, I remember seeing because they brought in like Marco Huas, who was the other Mark Kerr.
Yeah,
Who else was there? Who else was there? It was like four guys, right? Oleg Shatarov.
Yeah. Yeah. This is after we left.
Yeah. So they got, you know, articles or Boss Rutan, right? Yeah. And so they had some ads in the Black Belt magazines and the grappling magazines, you know.
Oh yeah.
But it's cool to see it's still around, you know, till today.
Yeah.
You know, I think Marcus has his son helping them too these days, and yeah, they're still around.
But a lot of people didn't know that I
was. Yeah. You're involved. Yeah.
We're the original founders.
Wow.
Because this guy came to me after I left. He goes, "What happened?" I told him. He says, "Let's start a school." And I said, "Dude, it's a lot of responsibility and it takes a lot of money, more than 60 grand. And he goes, "Richard, I got the money. You and Lowell bring the talent. You'll do the teaching. We both got certified to teach over there." Mm. So we went, "What the heck?"
Yeah.
Then Fabio, shortly after, gave me and Lowell our black belts. And he, you know, Fabio did it over the phone. He goes,
Fabio Santos?
Yeah, he goes, "I can't believe Horn didn't give you a black belt. I'm giving you your black belt."
So just tell me the story with Fabio Santos and the Gracie family and how his part, he came out as well in those early days.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because a lot of people don't know who Fabio Santos is these days, but he was he moved to San Diego, one of the early guys, Gracie.
Yeah, well, he came here to, and he taught at the Gracie Academy for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it was me, Fabio, Lowell. Fabio did a couple challenges, but like anybody, you know, Horian was a got to be this way. And
my way or the highway.
That's right. And it was with everybody. I mean, you know, so I didn't feel too bad when I left there. But Fabio was there, and I really like Fabio. Fabio, first, it was a really good practitioner. I think he got his black belt from Hickson.
Mm.
And you can see him do some of those early challenge matches on YouTube. And he was just, you know, he was a fun guy to be around, and he had a lot of jiu-jitsu experience from Brazil.
Right.
So, you know, it was always fun to be at the academy. It was a dream job. Until I left there.
Yeah. No, because I remember Fabio Santos, he moved to San Diego, right? So he had a gym there he was one of the early, first Gracie gym in San Diego, first Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gym in San Diego.
And I think he started teaching, who was that one guy?
I think like Dean Lister.
Yeah, Dean Lister.
Yeah.
And then till Dean Lister started, you know, become notorious for those foot locks and heel hooks and leg locks. But Fabio was, he moved to Utah, but he still does seminars and he goes back to San Diego every so often.
Yeah, because he has the roots there, right, for a lot of years.
Yeah.
Same Higgs, he trained with Scott Sahn and the Attack Fit creator, and he did a lot of, started doing Sambo and stuff, and I think he gave, well, he, I think he gave ended up giving Dean Lister his black belt, but maybe that was like some of that leg lock influence, because people used to boo, right? Remember they used to boo at tournaments if you tried to do a leg lock.
Yeah.
If you
didn't
pass the guard and you would try a leg lock, they would boo. So, yeah. So Fabio Santos probably didn't like the leg locks, right?
Everything, you know, it was
so
it was
funny.
New, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was also too the heel hooks. I remember I started showing the heel hooks over at Krav Maga, and the first, few months, I had three guys out on crutches, because you had these guys with
right.
big egos.
And they don't tap, yeah.
Yeah, they
that's terrible.
Yeah, so.
Terrible.
So I said, look, guys, no heel hooks.
Yeah, yeah, that's terrible. Especially if these guys don't know what they're doing, right? And
yeah.
how far they can go push themselves. Yeah.
Well, you see now guys in the UFC, I mean, like, I just saw a video of some guy, wasn't in the UFC, was a jiu-jitsu tournament, and the guy just caught this guy in a wicked heel hook.
Yeah, yeah.
And snapped his ankle.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And put it this way, you snap the ankle, you're going so hard because usually it was the knee that got destroyed.
Right, right. You know, because like you were saying earlier, right, about how Hoyer Gracie was able to, you know, choke the person out without having to hurt them, right?
Yeah.
But that's, you know, you're hurting somebody by snapping the leg.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, well, back then, though, I mean, no one knew what to expect. And we had a secret weapon.
Right, right.
And you come in and you'd, you know, all the... It was just punching and kicking.
Right, right.
And the next thing you know, he's clinching, pulling
right,
the guy
right,
down,
right,
and
right.
finishing up, and that's it.
Did you ever watch Haley Gracie training?
Not so much training, but just doing little stuff on the mat. I mean,
okay.
I don't know if he really trained a lot, but he would just do situations.
Was he in his 60s by the time you met him?
Yeah, I think he was about 65 when I met him.
65, okay, yeah.
And he was doing just like really. He started focusing when after Hidden was born. You know, he would come back and forth, and they would go to Brazil. And I remember when Hidden was about just when I left the academy, Hidden was about 13 or 14, and he didn't like training with me because you know I was catching him. And you know, I tell Hidden, I said, "I'm so glad I was nice to you then, because I never, you know, I would always." Catch him technically.
Yeah.
And he got so good after, you know, because his grandfather would come and take the toughest guys in the academy.
Yeah.
And take him and he'd say, okay, mount on Hiron.
Yeah. People don't realize how tough Hiron is.
Oh, Hiron is.
He's a top competitor.
Yeah.
You know.
But who's who.
Then
and he's mastered the trap and roll like no one else. I mean, I use elbow skate. Chris Saunders, who's a friend of mine, who's Hickson's first black belt in the U.S., he, you know, went over and had a class with Hidden about 10 years ago. And he goes, Richard, he says, you know, I'm a Hickson's first black belt. He said, I felt like a white belt rolling with Hidden. 10 years ago, especially, I mean, Hidden was, you know, when he fought Andre Galvalin, all my students were going like, oh, man, your boy's going to get hurt. I says, you know, don't underestimate Hidden Gracie. And you know, and he just stayed relaxed for like the first 12 minutes, you know, because he didn't want to play that game. Because he himself said, "Look," he says, "that's when I'm going to get caught." He says, "trying to compete with somebody, play their game," he said, "when I don't have to."
Right.
And so many of my guys said, "Oh well, yeah, he's playing defense." I said, "Oh yeah, you go play defense with a world champion, see how long you last." You know, so. You know, Hidden and Henner, they're both really talented guys. So, but.
No, for sure. Hidden is I know Hidden because I used to follow him, and he beat the who's who. And Andre Galvao, I mean, he wasn't so active anymore when he competed with Andre Galvao by that time, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I know he was like the top of the food chain.
Yeah.
As far as everything.
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu wise in the world.
Yeah. He was at one point going to go into the UFC.
Oh yeah.
But I think that
the dad is like, nah.
Well, no, I think they talked about it because he kind of was saying, yeah, but you know, Hidden Henner said, you know what, that was the generation before us,
right, to prove the effectiveness of it.
Yeah, we want to show the
teaching
why we're doing it.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's it. Different you're different place now, right?
Yeah, so
to spread the the art, film, I mean, is art.
When you go in there now, you're competing against other guys who know your art. So
right, now.
It's just an ego thing, you know, to see if you can win.
But everybody's had to learn jiu-jitsu.
Absolutely.
Or else you're not going to be fighting for long, right, in MMA.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
So.
What are you most grateful for in your jiu-jitsu journey?
That day in July of 1979 when I met Horian, I don't know if there's one thing in particular, because that I was doing fast food, I was doing drugs. So when I moved in with Horian never lectured me about not to do drugs. He said, don't do that, it's not good for you, whatever. He never made me feel bad for doing it. He always just focused on the good. He said, you know, just put good food in your body. As a matter of fact, that day that I talked about earlier when I was crying, and he said, Richard, at the end of it, he said, just show up for class. And he said, I want you to think about something else. I said, what? He says, I want you to think about what you're putting in your body, what you eat. And I said, what for? I'm just going to do drugs. He says, that's the reason. So that little thing clicked in my head. Focus on doing something good for yourself. If you keep doing that, the bad will take care of it. So that kind of, in spite of all the stuff that me leaving the academy, it's still jiu-jitsu in itself, just being able to be where I was, to be able to assist in something that became organically so huge and just would change my life forever. You know, I don't know if there's one thing in particular. It's jiu-jitsu that just how I got to be part of this amazing ride.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, amazing. Amazing. I have one quick question about your parents.
Well, I got to go. I'm sorry.
What did they think about when you asked them to you know, investing in a jiu-jitsu gym?
They kind of said it's kind of crazy, but they said, if this is what you really want, I said, yeah. I said, it's gonna happen.
It's gonna happen.
Yeah.
And what did they think about you doing jiu-jitsu?
Well, my dad, my dad passed 21 years ago. He didn't really, even though I've been teaching for 30 years.
Yeah.
He was proud of what I saw, but he never he got to see me teach a little bit, but he really was proud that I, you know, started to make my own course. But my mom, who recently passed a couple of months ago, she got to see it. I read her a lot of she had my book, and I also would read the reviews on Amazon. I said, Mom, look what this person said. Look what this person said. My mom was extremely proud that I had gone from where I was to where I am now. And, you know, she just, it's so nice that she got a chance to see something like that, because it was her sensitivity that made me as vulnerable as I am, you know, and just her belief that, you know, that, yeah, if this is what you want to do, do it. She goes, you want to be happy, just keep doing what you love to do. And, you know, so I wish that, you know, I just did a thing for, a few months ago for the ESPN's doing a documentary. Mm. And I did my part in there. And I wish that, you know, she goes, when do I get to see it? And I said, 2025. They say it'll come out, and she goes, wow. She goes, that's a long time to stick around. I said, well, maybe you'll see it from another place. But, you know, just that they wanted me to do something that I believed in, and they were on board 100%. Skeptical.
Right, at the beginning.
At the beginning. Sure. But, you know, I think all in all, I'm sure they're glad that they did. You know, even though we never made any money on the UFC, But to be part of something
at the beginning, or at the beginning, right?
Yeah, when they sold out, we were actually, the way the investment was, we were supposed to lose our money. That's the way it read. And Horian called me and he says, "Richard, we sold it, and you guys lost your money." And I'm like, "Horian." Mm. He says, "That's what the contract said." I said, "Horian, I said, if I lose my money and if my parents lose their money on this 10 grand each, I says, never ask me for a penny ever again." And he went back to Suzanne and they talked. And, she said, "These are your students." And so Horian paid us our money back plus 10% out of his own share, because Art Davey,
right,
he basically said they should have read the contract, you know, and that was business. But this was,
he did it right.
Yeah, Horian was, these were his students.
Yeah.
Art, they were just, you know, not disrespect to Art, but, you know, he wasn't the jiu-jitsu teacher. He was the businessman.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think there's one thing that I'm thankful that I get to meet people like you that are stepping up the jiu-jitsu and making it known and have a big influence on people, you know, and just that I get to share this with as many as possible.
I'm so thankful for you. I mean, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for guys like you believing, you know, and jumping, you know, taking the leap of faith, right, and doing what you did.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. How can people find you?
They could go to richardbressler.com. I'm Richard Bressler on Facebook.
Okay.
Richard.Bressler Instagram.
Okay.
I think if they Google Richard Bressler, you know, there's so much. I mean, if you can't find me after you Google my name, there's a problem. Yeah. So, and this is, by the way, a shout out to Phil Miglaris.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know Phil?
Of course, yeah. Is it? No, I think Dave connected us, right? Novigrad?
Possibly.
But I think Phil was trying to connect us as well.
Yeah, Phil, you know, is Helsin.
Balance.
Yeah, Balance. And when I...
In Philadelphia?
Yeah, when I talked to Phil about the book, and he said, you know, we talked, you know, because him and I are pretty good friends, and he said, "Richard, do you have a website?" And I said, "No, I don't." And he called me 2 days later. He said, "Now you do." And he made me a really nice website, and I went to, you know, and he says, "Right now it's through Balance." And he says, "But wait a couple months and we're just going to feed it everything to you." And so now richardbressler.com is something that he created. I mean, I was blown away. And he said, you know, he said, "Dude, you've done so much." He said, "It's just my way of like helping you out." So
awesome. Yeah. Karma.
Yeah. I'm happy to be part of that. So
thank you.
Thank you.